There we go. Kiva's bopping away there.
Oh, I love it.
David Byrne flowers. Actually, an abundance of Kivas now. I'm surrounded by them in the studio. Kiva McCarthy, member of Art as Exchange and Little Twit Designs. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Who wouldn't be in that wonderful weather? Dunlear based.
I am at the moment. Well, yeah. I am now.
You are now. Were you originally from Dunlear?
No, I'm originally from Drogheda.
All right,
so,
okay.
Moved to Dunlear in 2011.
Right.
So, love it so far. And seem to be turning right instead of turning left more and more. And heading for Dundalk because I've met such good people up here. So, so there you go.
Okay. Was that an unusual move to make from Drogheda?
Well, do you know, it was my pathetic attempt to, you know, a little bit of independence. Okay. You know, to make a break.
Yeah.
Sort of out, and I always had a dream of living quite rurally, and had always lived in the town. So we're out in the sticks now, and I really love it. But Dunlear, I hadn't actually chosen Dunlear. Kind of felt like everything just fell into alignment, and it chose us. Found a house that had a studio already built, and I was looking for somewhere where I could build a studio. Mm-hmm. So there we were in this gorgeous, quiet spot, in this beautiful studio, and I was like, "All right, that's it." You know, and one of my dad's favourite trees was in the garden, and I just went. It just felt like
okay, you know, it was all there.
Well, that's it. The real estate agent said, she said people spend longer picking a pair of jeans. But so yeah, just been really happy there ever since. So
okay. Little Twit.
Yes.
Tell us about that. How did that come about?
Well, Little Twit started off as a book. My dad called me Little Twit as a nickname growing up, which I like to think was a kindness, not a...
Of course it is. It's
just
your
with
dad.
A little bit of reality snuck in.
I'm not even going to say what my husband calls my daughter because I don't think
he's not arable.
It is really if you unless you speak Italian, but still.
You know, come on. So yeah, I think he just liked to keep me grounded. But so when he died in 2008, I decided I wanted to sit down and write and illustrate a book about him and me when we were small. And he was an imaginative man, and so was I. So I'm not even sure how many facts are actually in my memories or if it's all just an amalgamation of imagined moments and, you know, real moments. But I wanted to capture them so that my children growing up would know the kind of man he was to me. And I got so far with it, and I just found it... I'd end up in a puddle. You know, you'd sit down and you'd write down a memory and you'd draw a little picture and then I'd cry for hours. So it was a lovely sort of, maybe a process of grieving. It was good for me in that sense, but I haven't been able to finish it. So we're at 10 years now at the end of this year. And maybe I keep promising myself that I'm going to, I put it away in a bottom drawer and I said, I'm going to come back to that when I'm ready. And then distracted myself by having babies. And then when my youngest was about one, I was, or two even, I just got really bored and a bit fed up, you know, when you're just tied to the house all the time. And I thought, I'm going to start doing a bit of drawing again. And one of my friends saw my drawings and she said, oh, you know, I'd love one of those of my family. It was like a little portrait type thing. Mm-hmm. And she shared it on Facebook and she said, oh, a few people have been asking me about your work. So I set up a Little Twit Facebook page. Mortified, like not thinking that anybody, you know, and I was glad to have the Little Twit name to use because I could distance myself from it personally. It was like Little Twit nearly became a whole different person, you know, and then it just sort of grew legs that I didn't expect it to do. So I was just running to catch up with myself from then on until this year where I kind of put the brakes on things. And said, no, this has all gone off in a tangent that I hadn't planned. And, you know, when you haven't made a plan that you're running to keep up with something that's happening without your, you know, where I just wasn't feeling entirely comfortable with where I was ending up. And I thought, no, I'm going to take a break and try and make an actual plan this time.
Yeah.
Because I went to Louth Enterprise and I did loads of courses and I met with really cool mentors and, you know, consultants, and they were able to give me great advice, but all the advice kept coming back to the fact that I didn't have a very viable business. You know, that when it came to, you know, people
in the money terminology,
I didn't have a very viable business. So I felt like I'd been working flat out And then I felt like I'd failed. And then I suddenly realised I'd never meant to start a business. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm just going to take stock now until September. I'm giving myself the summer off and I'm going to take stock and see if I can come up with a new plan, where you're not always bashing yourself over the head, you know, for going,
but do you need a plan? I mean, it's interesting you should say that, because we had one of your colleagues in Art as Exchange in a few weeks ago, and she was explaining to us that she had studied art, but then she had taken herself off and done a business qualification.
Oh yes, yeah. Well, you kind of need two heads.
Because she felt that she needed to. And to me, it made sense, but it also seemed to run against what we associate with, you know, the whole freedom of being an artist and expression, and that, you know, that you have to actually, you know, compartmentalize it like that and bring in this other element that needs, you know.
I know, I'd love for there to be a really brainy, businessy person, you know, who comes to you and says, oh, I'm going to, you know, do all that thinking that you can't even contemplate, like, you know, while you're off goofing off out a window coming up with some daft doodle, I'm going to, you know, make a plan how you can make a viable living. That's what I'd love.
So
I'm sure, wouldn't that be great though? I'm sure there's people out there, like agents for artists that could do it. But you see, I never even, like with Susan and Una and stuff, you know, they studied, and Bernard, they studied what they do, and they're well armed with proper facts and knowledge, and I am a proper little twit really in a lot of ways, because I haven't a baldy about the business or even the process. I'm just learning all the time as I go, because I never trained. I've just been drawing since I was a kid. So,
Which does, you know, do you need to train?
It's a debate I'm always having with myself.
You talked to us off air and you mentioned that you did study music.
Yes, I did.
You know, there's certain crossovers there.
There is, and actually the body of work that I'm trying to sort of hatch out of a little egg in my brain at the moment mixes the two, music and art, and it's about trying to find, you know, the space between music notes is where the music lies, you know, so otherwise you just have noise. So I'm trying to focus on the space between things. And ironically, actually, that brings me back to, I did try going to NCAD to, you know, do the portfolio preparation straight out of school. And the very first day we were set up and told we had to draw negative spaces. And I was like, oh, God, no, like, that's just far too negative. And they gave me the caster off a sofa, you know, a wheel off a chair, and said, now draw the negative spaces and that. And I was so upset, because I thought I was going to finally be set free, you know, to be an artist after the of education, you know, up until the Leaving Cert. So I was very, very disenchanted with the whole thing.
Negative space. That sounds like maths to me.
Well, it is. It is, because there's an awful lot of physics and maths involved, and I'm not very good at either. So I'm desperate, actually, at maths. Terrible. And, of course, everybody always says, but you can't be if you're a musician. You have to be good at maths. I'm like, well, maybe I'm a terrible musician as well. So
I don't know, Kiva, come in on that one, because she is, I think this came up before about the link between art and physics and maths.
Yeah,
and
we did with another artist as well. Yeah. We had in, I can't remember now, we're talking about, she was saying, it wasn't that if you can draw lines and things like that, then you can learn to draw.
Oh, exactly. Because
I can do physics and maths, I have a degree in physics and maths, but I'm not a musician and I'm a terrible artist. I'm absolutely brutal at art. So,
well, I don't know. I used to teach singing, which was by accident as well. All of the things I've ever ended up doing for a living were entirely accidental. I still haven't decided what I want to be when I grow up.
I like
so,
that.
I'm hoping one of these days there'll be some kind of, you know, light bulb moment. But I was teaching singing and everybody would say, oh, you know, they say that, you know, everybody can sing. I was like, no, you know, I don't know. Maybe if you'd a really good teacher, which I wasn't, because I wasn't a classically trained teacher or anything, maybe they could make you sing. But I certainly, my husband's always, I'm always teasing him that we'd sit down and start playing a bit of music together. And I think maybe it's what we do with all aspects of our lives is we don't actually listen to the reality. We have a perception of what we sound like or what we're doing or who we are, and then the reality of it might be quite different. So I haven't managed to turn him into a singer yet. So sorry, Richie.
I'm very glad to hear you say that, because there's somebody else who comes who's been in here as a singing teacher, and I put this question to her: can anybody be taught to sing? And she kind of reckoned you could, and I was, but look, I have heard some people that there's just no way.
You've no tone if you can't hear the music.
It's just not there, and I'm like, no, they wouldn't. You couldn't.
I have a sister who always claimed growing up that she was tone deaf, and she was the best on the piano out of all of us because she learned to read music, play what was written on the music, and therefore she was the best at it. Whereas I play everything by ear. I'm not good at reading music or seeing things written down at all. It's the same with maths. Everything just seems to move around a little bit on a page for me. But I could repeat any rhythm or tune for you. You know, I had a great ear. Mm. So it was that only gets you so far, and you always feel like a fraud when you're teaching and performing, or when you're handed.
You're giving away too many trade secrets.
Oh God, you feel like I feel like a fraud at everything that I do. Maybe that's more reflection of me. So
we go back to the little twit designs, though, because they are, it's quite unique and interesting that you said this started out as, you know, maybe illustrations for this book that you, I think, probably will eventually.
It will, I hope,
to.
I really hope.
You know, it grew from there, but it's, and it's not conventional, it's not any conventional form, and it is very unique, which is probably what real art should be.
Well, you see, I find it hard to even think of it as art. I remember trying to differentiate between illustration and art at one stage and struggling with it, you know, because I just, it's hard to say that I sit down with some inks and watercolours and draw, you know, something daft and then that it's art. I always feel it's much more an illustration of something that I'm trying to get out of my head, you know. So, like reading the Riot Act, for example, I was incredibly cross one day and I found I was just sick of listening to myself giving out and saying the same thing. So I sat down that day and I painted Reading the Riot Act, knickers in a twist and standing on my soapbox. And then I felt a whole lot better, you know, so it's therapy, I suppose.
We should explain to the benefit of our listeners who've just like, Reading the Riot Act.
Sorry,
all that about?
Random, and titles,
unfortunately, on radio, we can't give you the visuals, but we had come across Kiva's work before. And in fact, our other Kiva here in the studio was the recipient of one because I got it for her as a Christmas present in Silver Lining.
Which is very kind of both of you.
Obviously, called out to you, Marissa.
Yeah. I completely fell for it. I completely fell in love with it. And it was, you know, this, you describe it for me.
Well, it was kind of me at the time, and just sitting down reading a book that was called The Riot Act.
Right, exactly.
So it's just a very rough doodle of me. And
but there was that little twist in it, and that's what I'm saying. There was almost a literary aspect to the visual as well, which I liked. And I can see.
Well, there is in most of my pieces. Yeah. It's like I have a Rapunzel piece where Rapunzel's tower has been surrounded with urban sprawl and, you know, kind of horribleness, wheelie bins, and she's still up there. And there's just some fella sitting down there paying no attention to her. And it's like, why are we still waiting for men to rescue us from towers? You know, or when I couldn't believe, you know, with The Princess and the Pea, when you were growing up reading it and she complained to this person who'd put her up as a stray stranger, soggy, turned up at the door, and then she was put up in this enormous bed. And then she gets up and she complains about it. And I used to lie there listening while my mum was telling me the story, going, I'd never be that rude. You know, so I thought she was a stroppy little madam. And I, you know.
Most princesses are.
So I know, like, so I have a Princess in the Pea illustration where there's just like a stroppy little madam on top of a heap of princess or a heap of mattresses. And you just think, like, you know, we need to renegotiate the terms of how we're reading things to our children, how we're processing the stories that we already know and question them. So I certainly wouldn't be keen on waiting for a prince to rescue me ever.
But was that not the point of The Princess and the Pea? Because I know I used to be called The Princess and the Pea by my family because apparently I was a very spoiled child. But I think the point was that it was supposed to be a moral in it that don't be a spoiled brat. You know, if someone does something for you or whatever, you know, don't complain about it.
They wouldn't have discovered she was a princess if she didn't complain about the bruises.
She'd
have been, if she was polite, she'd have never been discovered.
I know the moral that was in my house about it was, oh, you're the Princess and the Pea. Oh, you're particular and you're picky and you're ungrateful, basically.
I don't know, the squeaky door gets the oil. There's my next illustration for you.
The business part of it, did you rely then, Kiva, on commissions? Is that how you, or?
It was. Unwittingly, I started getting commissions and I found it all a little bit overwhelming because I wasn't sure how to when it comes to price points, you know, how do you charge for your time, that kind of thing. And it's all a more lengthy process than they probably appear when you see the finished scribble, you know. So so I did 3 start your own business courses. I did social media, all with the Louth Enterprise Office, and they set me up with mentors and for things like arts marketing and merchandising, and it all became incredibly businessy, and I started feeling not very like me, but I was working and working and working very hard. And with this, I had 2 goals in my head. I wanted to get to the showcase, you know, the national showcase that's in the RDS every year, and the Louth Enterprise Office usually put forward 1 to 3 people into that. So I had a goal that I wanted to make it a showcase, and I wanted to get a book deal. This was the big thing for me, was I wanted to illustrate somebody else's brain, because my own is messy, you know. It can be hard to make that a tidy correspondence.
And a lot of that also works. I mean, there's very few of the really big writers who illustrate for themselves. Mm. You know, if you think, but there are a lot of groups, 2 pairings that work together.
But
you
it
know,
is, because I'd be going
Julia Donaldson and
For sure, yeah.
Scheffler,
yeah.
Or, you know, Quentin Blake and Roald Dahl. They're,
absolutely.
You know what I mean?
So, yes, yeah. Because Quentin Blake is Roald Dahl in your brain when you picture, you know.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I've been compared to different people, and then I still, well, I enjoy reading to my youngest, which that I buy far too many children's books based on the illustrations and the quirky stories that are in them, rather than the kind of generic stories that we all know. But she's very strong-willed about what she, you know, because I'd be brought to tears by some children's books. You know, like the Guess How Much I Love You books that everybody falls for, with the daddy hair telling a story to the baby hair. I'd be like, oh my God, well, I'm reading this, you know. And she's like, I really don't like that book. But she really does like, you know, some of John Classen's books where, you know, there's a very obvious cause and effect where, you know, like a fish will steal a hat, and then the big fish that owned the hat eats the little fish that stole the hat. So that kind of stuff she likes.
She's very straight, like, no crap or fuzz
but
in the middle.
Just, she likes a bit of eating going on. So so I would love to do that. But then at the end of that year, it was like all my ships came in, and I got offered a book deal, and I got offered the Enterprise and or the
showcase.
The showcase. And I was elated for a week, until I was heading off with my family to Cork. And then when I got down there, I suddenly realised that it was probably more work to get the 2 of them at the same time. It was probably more work than I could manage, because there was a very short turnover date for both. And I came back and I sought out a bit of professional guidance on the whole thing, and realised I wasn't going to make any money. I was actually going to make a loss. So I just got entirely deflated. You know, I just... And I had to contact them and say, you know, I can't manage this time, I can't manage this energy, I just can't manage this at all at the moment. And I really kind of slumped down into a hole until after Christmas. I just stuck my head in the sand, you know, and it was like, oh, I can't believe I've worked for 3 years with this goal in mind, and then you get it. And I don't know whether it was cowardice. I went to see a counsellor because I was very scared. I was saying no out of fear rather than out of it being actually unviable, and I managed to talk myself into taking some time off this year. So so we'll see. I might do it again. I hope I'll do something again.
I think you will.
I think something will happen.
I think life is a habit of doing that.
I think you've an inspiration for either a book or an illustration in
just
what you told
there. It might be the book about your dad.
It might not be. God, he'd probably crack up anyway if he knew.
Oh, well. You can bring him into it. Or you could, look, a dedication.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because let's face it, whatever book it is, it will ultimately have been inspired by him anyway.
Absolutely. Oh, well, an awful lot of me is inspired by him, because he was a very inspirational man, and he was incredibly creative but very successful with it. You know, these people who manage to actually make a really good living out of being inventive and creative, whereas, you know, so I'm yet to find that. But he was 42. Like, he was, when he started his own business, he had a really good job and he quit and followed his dream. So he is an inspiration to me all the time. And so was my mum, because she's just dead clever and successful. So they're a hard act to follow. Maybe that's the problem. So
it's, you're an inspiration as well. And what's most inspiring about it is that you're willing to admit that you are fallible. And I think that's, you know,
mostly. That's, yeah.
which means because you could admit that, I think is why you will ultimately succeed. In the meantime, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Grace. Thank you. And thanks,
enjoy your few months off and really let us know what you decide to do in September.
I will. Oh, do you know what? I was meant to tell you that there is, I am Little Twitch is taking part in an exhibition that's coming up in Listoke in the summer, so that will be out in Listoke in the Ballymakenny Road.
Listoke, is that the place to make the gin?
It is. Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah, it is. But there's beautiful gallery and gardens and everything there, so that's the spot.
Excellent. And we have a date for that.
Well, it opens just now, soon in July. I'm going there directly after here today with some work and reading the art act. Will be there, and some of my Kevin McCarthy art hopefully will be in it as well. And there's loads of really, really talented people. It's a big group show. So called Blahana August Dahana. So that should be a nice date. And big thanks to AAEX, who I never mentioned at all.
Okay, don't worry.
They'll the
be
best
getting,
group
they'll
ever.
Yeah. Loads of mentions in here. Kevin McCarthy,
thanks,
thank
Marissa,
you.
Thank you.
Subway at the Marshes Shopping Centre, delivering sandwiches, sandwich platters and salads to homes, offices and workplaces. Sponsors of Town Talk on Dundalk FM.
On 97.7 FM.